Welcome to season 20 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome back to season 20. We've had so much content lately related to leadership and sports, and while I absolutely love that stuff, I think there's moments where we all need to take a step back, reflect on our life, and have some real perspective and motivation for what we're doing here on earth. And that is exactly what we do in this week's featured conversation with my friend Dylan Slattery. Dylan has survived cancer twice before the age of 27. He lost 60 pounds since being taken off of treatments in 2017. He now hosts a weekly podcast to share inspiring stories of faith and grit and personal growth to really spread hope and empower resilience in the face of adversity. And whether it's on the air, on the podcast, or on a stage, Dylan truly leads others to be the cure and to live an inspired life of meaning and passion with his unique perspective on life. He challenges you today to take your life from stage four to on stage. I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed this show and the perspective that it brought me in my life that I think it's going to bring to yours. I am so encouraged by Dylan. I'm so thankful that he fought and has stayed alive to tell his story to you today, much like he told me. And so I want you to stick around till the very end. He asks you one of the most powerful questions you will ever be asked in your life, and I hope you're ready to answer it. Without further ado, here is my interesting and empowering conversation with my friend Dylan Slattery. Well, Dylan, thanks for being on the show.
John, it's a pleasure, man. You know, I know your show is called Follow My Lead, and I'm used to leading my own show, but I'm excited to follow your lead today and just provide a ton of value and share a lot about my story and how we're impacting lives together today. So thanks for having me on the show, John.
You're more than welcome. I'm appreciative of you making the time. So for most of our audience, they're not going to know who Dylan Slattery is and what you've been through in your life of 27 years. I want you to start with before you were born.
Yeah. Yeah. So a huge part of my story is less than a month before I was born, March 29th of 1991, my father made a decision that is very hard to understand, especially growing up. It was very hard for me to wrap my mind around the decision that my father made to take his own life. So March 29th, 1991, he made that decision. April 21st, 1991, I was able to come into this world to a mother who just loved me more than anything in the world. And so a huge part of my story is my father's decision, but also that love between my mother and I is, you know, I'm all that she has left of him, and we have a strong relationship between us as well. And so it's an interesting dynamic, and it's played a huge part of who I am as a person for sure.
So your mom remarries early on. So you really only know your stepdad as your dad per se. How much have you learned about your dad, you know, through the years?
I've learned a ton about my dad, mostly because I have some similar tendencies. And as I'll share with the audience as we continue to unwrap this thing, a lot of those tendencies were very unhealthy. I'm very much an all or nothing kind of a person. So if there's a bag of chips there, I either need to throw the chips in the trash or I'm going to eat all of the chips. And so that relationship has played itself out with things like, you know, food, as I mentioned, alcohol and drugs when things got tough. And so the thing that I've learned is my brand is called Stage Four to On Stage. And so it recognizes that everybody has their stage four moment. And we have a choice. We have a choice that we can make. In a world that's filled with cancer, we can choose to be a cure, or we can choose to be that cancer and let it continue to infect us. And ultimately, if we make the choice to be a cure, we can make that journey from stage four to on stage, as I like to call it. So, but it hasn't always been that easy, and it's not that easy for everybody making that decision on a consistent basis to be a cure. And so I can't wait to share.
Let's dive into what happened. So you went to the University of Iowa. You played baseball growing up, exceptional baseball player. And when do you find out the first time that you have cancer?
Yeah. So I actually attended a junior college in Iowa and then went to the University of Northern Iowa to get my degree. And then all of my treatments I did at the University of Iowa. So I'm definitely identify as a Hawkeye, but I did graduate from the University of Northern Iowa. But so I'm a huge baseball fan, grew up in Dyersville, Iowa, where the Field of Dreams is. And so baseball has always been a huge passion of mine and played a massive role in shaping me as a person. I love the game of baseball because you never know when you're going to watch the last pitch. You can't run out the clock. You can't take a knee. And there's just so many lessons that you can extract from the game of baseball when you truly appreciate it. But things started to change for me. You know, I was an Eagle Scout in high school, went to the state championship playing baseball. So many good things. Grew up in the church, strong faith. At least I thought I had a strong faith at the time until it was tested. And then went to college right before my 22nd birthday is when this just massive gauntlet of adversity started to hit my life. And so 2 months before I turned 22, my girlfriend and I at the time, we broke up, and it was the first time in my life where I really felt like I wasn't good enough for someone, and I didn't handle it well. Did not handle it well, and as many can probably relate, in college, there's so much temptation and so many distractions where you can choose to not deal with the problem and distract it and mask it with so many things. So that started a trend, a backwards trend from being the leader that I was in high school and growing up, and to this denial, creating this identity that just wasn't in alignment with who I was, completely abandoning my value system. And so it started with the breakup. 2 months later, right after my 22nd birthday, we spent my parents' anniversary up at Mayo Clinic doing scan after scan and test after test, then ended up doing a surgery on the right side of my face where I had a mole. So I have about a 7-inch scar to remove some of the lymph nodes as well as the mole on that right side of my neck. And instead of using that as a wake-up call, continued to use that as an excuse to start not going to class, drink more, mask reality more often with drugs and alcohol and food. And so all of those things started to come in and play a role in my life. And then 6 months later, you know, just when I thought things couldn't get any worse, I was home for Christmas break and it was a wintry night in Iowa, much like they're having right now. We were on our way home and things had gotten pretty slick while we were out. And we crossed the center line, hit the ditch, and the vehicle that we were in rolled, I believe, up to 6 times. And so during that rollover, the girl who was in the back seat behind the driver, I was in the back seat behind the passenger. When we rolled, she was partially ejected and killed. And everybody else in the vehicle went into shock, except me for some reason. And I believe it was probably due to the fact that I was numb to reality. I was truly creating this reality where I was someone who I actually was not. And so I did CPR on her, tried to save her, and could not. And so dealing with those images, that event, and I mean, the event happened literally like 4 miles from where I grew up. And so constantly driving by there, you're always reminded, people asking you about it. And it really just started to weigh on me. You know, the anger, the survivor's remorse, asking why me? Because at this point in my life, John, I had no hope. I had no purpose. And I was really wondering why I was even put on this earth. And struggled with that fact, struggled with the idea of why me? Why didn't they just take me in that car accident when Brittany had so much to offer the world? You know, she had this bright, shining smile, and here I was just wallowing in my sorrows, not even wanting to be here anymore. And so that was really, really tough on me. And I just kept going into this darker place. And things came to a head in on March 29th, 2014, when in a drunken stupor, I made some comments to my friends, and thank God I can truly call them friends, because in that hopelessness, they reached out to the person that they knew would be able to do something about it. And that was my mom. What they didn't know was that it was the 23rd anniversary of my father taking his own life. And so, as you can imagine, as any parents in the audience can imagine, she didn't take that very lightly. And so I woke up the next morning with her at my bedside asking me, are you okay, first of all? And why aren't you in class? And so at that point, I had to own up to the fact that I hadn't been to class in months, and that I had gone from, you know, just super successful as a student, double majoring, to not attending, ready to just call it quits. And so, you know, things I thought couldn't get any worse at that point. And then literally 6 months later, after going home, leaving school and going back to coach baseball, I was at an Iowa football game later that fall, had been out partying the night before, and woke up, you know, 5-6 hours after I'd gone to sleep to go tailgating. And I had this golf ball sized lump underneath my jaw, about an inch from the scar that I had gotten a year and a half before. And so that's when I knew the cancer was back. We made that trip up to Mayo Clinic again the following week, and that's when they gave me the news. And they told me, John, they said, you have tumors in your liver, lung, neck, and 3 tumors in your spine. The chances of survival are less than 15%. And so, you know, at 23 years old, I was handed that death sentence. And I you know, I didn't know how to respond at that point. I really didn't. I mean,
the vast majority of our audience, and myself included, have never had someone tell us that. What was the first thing that went through your mind?
The first thing that came to my mind was that I was going to die, because at 19 years old, I had a high school friend of mine who was a year older than me, was diagnosed with melanoma, and 3 weeks later he was dead. And so, you know, I thought I had gotten out of the woods the first time I had it, but, you know, initially I was like, there's no chance.
15% doesn't sound like good chance, you know?
Yeah. And it was experimental. There was no proven anything. I was someone else's test subject to hopefully find a cure down the road, which we've come a long way since then, thank goodness.
There's an interesting part in all this that you mentioned at the beginning. You said, you know, you thought your faith was strong. And like most young people that go to college, they grow up around some value system, some faith walk, some church, some good way to live, good way, how to be a good human being, all across the spectrum. And then they go to college, and the bright ones don't lose that. The vast majority of them do. It sounds like you mentioned you had kind of lost your way in that arena. And then you get the first time you get cancer. Did you think about God at all? And then certainly, what did you think the second time when you were told you had 15% chance to live?
So the first time, I would say absolutely did not think too much about God. Again, I was really numb to pretty much what reality was at that point, trying to convince myself that there was nothing wrong with me and that, you know, in terms of the relationship, that everything was on the other person, just totally deflecting all sense of responsibility. Now, the second time that I received the diagnosis, I had a little bit different approach. I was getting frustrated with God. Mostly it went like this. Why didn't you just take me in the car accident? Why didn't you just let me take my own life? Why don't you just let me die? It was a very hopeless approach because nothing made sense. And what I realized was that my faith was very shallow and superficial, which for a lot of people, if they really want to take a hard look at where they're at walking in their faith, there's a lot of wounds that need to be opened up and healed. And, you know, I'm not here to say that I'm perfect or anything like that, mm-hmm. but what we're starting to see is that, you know, when we can create a space where people can be vulnerable about what their weaknesses are, what they struggle with, it really allows for collaboration, because chances are there's somebody in that room that's dealing with something similar that can say, you know, this is what worked for me, or this is what worked for someone else that I know. It might work for you. And so when we can turn the tables and start to get solutions focused and come from a place of love, I think that's when things start to change.
Yeah, there's a mentor of mine told me early on, and I'll never forget this, Dylan. He said, John, everybody's going through something, whether you know it or not. And, you know, everybody in this social media world that we all live in, it's you're seeing everybody's best life all the time. And it's hard to think that this guy's got it perfect, or this girl's got it perfect, or this speaker, or this author, or whatever. And it's everybody's going through something. And so I think your words today, particularly around that, are need to be encouraging for anybody that's listening. So let's jump back in here. So you find out the second time that you have a 15% chance to live. You're at the Mayo Clinic. And then what happens?
So they gave me the option to go to the University of Iowa because we were approaching winter. It was November of 2014. And so instead of going north to Mayo, they gave me the option to head south to Iowa City. And so with a stronger support group in that area, we decided to make that change. And truly, it made all the difference. The story that I started to tell myself changed. And it was one of the doctors framed it like this. Instead of focusing on the 15%, he said, this is our best chance. This is our best chance to beat it. Now, I can't guarantee it, but it gives us our best shot. And that's all I needed to hear. Something started to click in my mind, and it was a turning point for me. At a time when I had nothing to fight for, at least that's what I was telling myself, cancer gave me something to fight for at a time when I needed it most. Mm. And so that's the approach that I took. I mean, and it got to an unhealthy point. You know, you talk about, you know, there's a song and it means a ton to me by Tim McGraw, Live Like You're Dying. And it's actually kind of funny because in the heart of my battle, I met the bass player for Tim McGraw, and I moved out to Colorado for a period of time, and he invited me to the concert at Red Rocks Amphitheater, which is one of the top venues in the country. And in the heat of my battle with cancer, actually in one of the moments where the cancer came back for a period, I thought it was gone and it came back. I got to experience this song in one of the top venues, and it was Live Like You're Dying. And it brought so many emotions to the surface. And it really showed me that I was living like I was dying. I was just unhealthy. I was partying like crazy because I had this approach where I never knew what my last day was going to be, but I used it as an excuse to just be reckless. reckless is probably the best word to describe my actions at that point. And so I took this unhealthy approach at first. It was, nothing's going to stop me. And I mean, nobody could tell me that I could do anything else because I had cancer. And what were they going to say? You know?
Yeah. So do you think that's, so you're using it almost as a crutch, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely believe that there's stages. And as we talked about before the call, the further you get away from something, the more perspective you have on it. And the more you can start to make sense of, like, wow, God was really working there at a point in my life where I could not see him. Mm. And one of the, there's a poem, I'm sure you've read it. It's called Footprints. And that describes my journey to a T. You know, during most of my battle with cancer, I was not strong in my faith. Wasn't going to church. I was angry at God.
Right.
I was like, why are you doing all this to me? You know, I've never even met my dad. You know, all of these different things that have happened in the last year and a half. Now you're putting me through this battle with cancer where I'm, you know, losing 35 pounds in a month and a half. Like, why me? Why me, God? And I didn't want anything to do with him. I wasn't willing to listen to his answer. And so Footprints, it's all about, you know, you see the footprints behind you, but what you don't realize is they're not even your footprints because he's carrying you. He's carrying you through those dark times.
And it's so hard too for people to realize because it's, you know, you're in, you, it's hard to see anything but what's going on in our own lives. Right. I mean, and to take a step back like that and for you to experience stage four, almost like a, I don't know why I'm going to say this, but a certain death wish in a way, to now come back and be able to tell somebody else that you weren't walking in that alone. And the whole time you thought you were, it's almost like crazy to think about. What happened for you to have that perspective now?
There's a lot of things that have happened, but I would say most of them have to do with the people that were in my life. Mm. And so I'm going to write a book and it's going to be called Cancer Cures. And it's going to talk about how cancer gave me something to fight for when I had nothing to fight for. At least that's what I felt like. And so a big part of that journey is my relationships with people. You know, we always say God brings people into your life when you need them most, but over and over and over again, that was the case. But I had to be willing to let them come into my life and receive the message that they were there to send. And so now I want to be that person for as many people as I can. I want to be that person that gives people hope when they're feeling hopeless. And I want to help people go from where they're at to who they were meant to be as a person. You know, we focus so much on the what people have. You know, I want to be like this person because of what they have or what they're doing. But what we don't think about, and what I think is the most important question to ask, is, you know, why do you look up to that person, and who are they serving? How are they serving people? And then ask yourself that question, who are you serving and how can I serve those people in a more powerful way? You know, we've shared a guest on our show, John, and it's John O'Leary. He wrote the book On Fire, and we were talking a little bit about this earlier, but the question that Jack Buck asked himself after seeing that 9-year-old boy given less than 1% chance to live is, what more can I do? And I think if we ask ourselves that question on a more consistent basis in terms of who am I serving and how am I serving them, our life would look a whole lot different. And so the perspective shift for me, what went from why me to thank God it wasn't one of my brothers. That was the initial shift. So I spent 4 weeks in the ICU. At one point, they had the paddles out ready to jump me because my organs were starting to falter and my blood pressure was getting super low. And we were in pods in the ICU, and I got to experience a death from a different perspective. One of the people across the hall from me passed away, and so I got to experience what that was like for their family. They shared the good times and the bad times and happy times and, you know, plenty of sad times. There were a lot of tears. And I got to asking myself, what would my family, what would my friends, what would the people most important to me, how would they remember me? And based on those previous 3 years of my life when I had just abandoned all sense of values, it wasn't how I wanted to be remembered. Mm. And so I made a commitment to myself that when I beat this thing, I'm going to make a difference.
I'm glad you're making a difference, Dylan. You know, just that question for any of our audience to think about is like, how do you want to be remembered? I mean, do you want to be remembered for what you're doing right now, the way you're treating people right now, the work that you're doing right now? I was talking to someone yesterday, Dylan. They're engaged, and she's looking. They just booked a wedding venue, a church, and a rehearsal place, and she's just feeling a lot of anxiety about it. And I said, you know, it's the greatest day, as much as a pain it is and as expensive as it is, it's the greatest day that you'll experience while you're alive, because it's the one time anybody that cares about you or that you've impacted in some way, shape, or form is in the room for you. And the only other time they'll be there is at your funeral. And so when you start thinking about that second part of that, which is your funeral, what do you want the people that are in that room to remember? Are they even going to show up because of what you've done? It's just a really interesting question to ask ourselves today on with your story being the center of it. So I can't thank you enough for one, sharing it. And then two, bouncing back, Dylan. I mean, you could have laid in that hospital bed and given up, and you didn't. And for that, I'm very thankful.
I appreciate that, John. And I appreciate you just giving me the opportunity to come on your show. I know you impact an incredible amount of people just through your reach and the people that consume your content, and more than happy to open up and be vulnerable in the hopes that someone else resonates with this and is inspired and finds the courage. I believe that's the word. We all have courage inside of us. We just need to find it. And once we can find that courage, we can unlock a version of us that we can't even imagine.
I was going to end, and when you said that word courage, Father Mike Schmitz says that there was someone in Canada said, you know, today parents, these helicopter parents, and the main job of a parent actually isn't to keep your kids safe. I mean, that's part of the job, but the main job of a parent is to teach your kids how to be courageous. And you just mentioned the word that courage is inside all of us. What can someone do to find that courage inside of them? Because they're not all going to have, you know, cancer like you had, or they're not all going to have these unbelievable events stacked on top of each other, with life coming at you harder than it's come to other people. So what can we do today to spark that courage inside of us?
Yeah, I believe it just starts with taking ownership. We've talked so much about the story that you're telling yourself. Taking ownership of the story that you've already written is imperative. It gives you a foundation to build off of, and it it allows you to start to take control where you can control things in terms of the inputs that you're, you know, in terms of your habits, the things that you're doing on a day-to-day basis to prepare yourself for the storms of life. So, you know, you talk so much of daily habits on this show and morning routines. And I truly think that it's just a small way to show that amongst the chaos that is life, you can take small wins, whether it's, you know, I crushed my morning this morning, after that went to work and things kind of went to hell. But if you can look back at the end of the day and say, you know what, I'm better because of my morning routine, because of spending time in prayer, because of getting my workout in, I can hang my hat on that. I can't control the rest of what happens to me. And I think that's the lesson through all this is, of course, not everybody's going to be diagnosed with cancer, but everybody can resonate with a breakup. Everybody can resonate with adversity in some aspect of their life. Someone telling them that they're not good enough for them or walking out of their life. Most people can resonate with something like that. And that if we can lean into that rather than run from it like I did, that's the lesson, is to stand up to that challenge. Because when we run away from it, as we saw through my journey, things start to stack, and that's when things start to look massive. And, you know, we've talked so much about faith, and there's no, you know, Steven Spielberg's written some great movies, produced some great movies. Nobody writes a better underdog story than God. Throughout all of history, He's taken the lowest of the low. You know, the lepers, time after time, it's people that you would not expect, people that the rest of society wasn't even giving the time of day. And He took them and created this platform for change. And so I believe He's given me, and I believe He's given you this platform to allow people a space where they can not only create change, but truly be transformed in who they are as people, which allows them to help transform the lives of so many other people.
It's powerful stuff. Give us the line one more time so it can soak in to our minds and our hearts. Cancer, say it one more time.
Yeah. In a world that's filled with cancer, you can choose to be a cure.
In a world that's filled with cancer, you can choose to be a cure. Dylan Slattery, we're appreciative that you're choosing to be a cure and not a cancer. Where can people find out more about you, the podcast? Where can we send people to the right places?
Yeah, so my website is stage4onstage.com. So it's stage4 spelled out, 2onstage.com. On there, you'll see all of my stuff about speaking, podcasting, coaching. So we do a lot working with people to help them go from the proverbial stage 4, wherever they find themselves today, to the stage that they were ultimately meant to be on, and just truly making an impact on as many people as possible. Facebook, I'm on there, stage4onstage, or Dylan Slattery is my personal page. And then I'm on Instagram as well, stage4onstage.
Well, Dylan, we can't thank you enough. We'll make sure to link to all that in the show notes. You're a blessing, man, and thanks for doing your work.
John, I appreciate you having me on the show, and I can't wait for that book to come out.
Thank you, my man. Thanks for joining us for another week of the show. If you enjoyed this, please do me a favor and write a recommendation or review wherever you listen to iTunes. It helps us get exposure for the show. And as always, be a good leader at work and at home.